Speaking of Reliability, a podcast with good friends talking with you about reliability engineering topics. Welcome to Speaking of Reliability. This is Fred Schenkelberg.
And this is Chris Jackson. And Fred and I were just talking about the reliability, maintainability management tutorial that we're going to be delivering at the RAMS conference.
Well, not me, Kimasabi. Not me. I'm not going.
Say royal we, but myself and Carl Carlson are taking over the mantle of delivering that tutorial. And yeah, we're just talking about what the approach.
What'd you do with my presentation? That's what I want to know. Well, one, congratulations. I'm very happy that you took on that role.
Very honored too.
And it's a core tutorial in their tutorial series thing. You can get a certificate for and everything else. But it's actually a really, really good topic that you don't see at RAMS very often. We talk about all these tools all the time, but never about how do you put them together to actually do something. And you can talk about FMEAs and accelerated testing all day long, but unless it serves a purpose, why bother? And that's what this course, at least the way when I was involved with it, that's what it was about. So how did you change it, Chris? What did you do to my presentation?
I suppose going back on my journey in this space, when you first get into reliability engineering or engineering more broadly, we were all technically minded people.
Yeah.
And I would imagine many people were like me in that thinking all you had to do was model the system and work out the inputs and variables and blah, 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 and just optimize over 16 variables and you work out what the right answer is eventually. And there's an element of truth to that. You can certainly study that and set tests and examinations to work out if you know how to do that. But it took a little while for me to understand that all that is for naught, or not only just for naught, all that could be potentially focusing on solving the wrong problem if you don't have the management piece in play. And it took a while for experience, it took a while for me to observe this over the years to realize, you know what, I feel I'm fairly comfortable in the true reliability engineering space, but reliability management is the dominant player or dominant tenant for good reliability outcomes. And it doesn't matter if you can model things or do data analysis well, if you don't understand how it helps your organization or business.
Yeah, exactly true. It's that was why I was asked way back when to teach that class, or the reliability engineering management class at Maryland. And it was from that course and talking about it, Carl and I met and said, we talk about the same things a lot. We do a lot of the same stuff. Let's put a proposal in to do this tutorial. And then exactly the way you phrased that topic is that you got to solve the right problems. And that's a management. Well, I would argue it's more of a leadership role, but the folks that control the purse strings and the directions of funding and sourcing of projects and everything else that we do and don't do, that's management. So we got to talk that language. We have to be aligned with that and understand it. And as distasteful as it is, especially when I first got started in it, it's necessary. It's not just a luxury.
Well, yeah. And I think distasteful, I'm glad you said that, because it was almost as if, at least when I started, management or the business side was just a painful afterthought or bitter aftertaste of having to do something which you thought was in earnest was going to solve all the problems of your product. But I've grown to love it in a way where it's the bedrock of everything. And you get the I find that
I'm starting to think you've gone to the dark side here. It's this.
What is this dark side?
It's management. Just an Australian reference again. The management side.
Oh, no. Well, it's good. There's good and bad management. There's good and bad reliability engineering. But nine times out of 10, all your employees are really, really super smart people. Otherwise, you wouldn't have hired them. You just got to reward them for doing the behaviors, or doing the things you want them to do, which is to make your product better. And then they'll go and solve the problem for you. You don't need to necessarily say, do a Weibull plot like this. You say, look, we need to maximize reliability. This is how we're going to work out if you're doing a good job or not. And they'll, off their own bat, learn how to do eyeball probability plotting or whatever it is that needs to happen.
But so when we talk about reliability engineering management, there's a couple connotations to that. One of them is that you're the reliability engineering manager. I think that's a part of that audience that you'll see at RAMS, is they have a team or a small team, or they're designated the reliability manager and they may not have any team. They're just that person. But they need to manage the implementation of a plan, develop a plan and implement it, or manage or deal with all the capital assets like thermal chambers, for example, and failure analysis processes and fracas systems and all the other infrastructure that goes into it. They may be managing systems and some people. That's one part of it. That's one piece of it.
Mm-hmm.
And some people are natural at it, and others it's a royal pain, but it leverages what you can do to get things done. It's all good. Another part of this concept, though, and I think you're alluding to it, is that you need to, it's not just understand and be aligned with where your organization is going or what your senior managers are expecting. It's, you need to manage up also, right?
Correct.
So it's, I think there's both directions that's part of this concept and in the tutorial to a large degree.
Well, the first person you described, he was he's a team lead. He's not a manager per se. I mean, he's a manager in a very technical sense, but you're talking about a reliability team lead who's there to make sure the laboratories work, make sure the reliability engineers get paid and do their courses and things like that. But the team lead can often be called a reliability manager, but in practice, they're just the one who gets allocated the responsibility for making it reliable, and the organization essentially then stops or doesn't even consider it to be anybody else's role to make
there's organizations like that.
That's right. So you're talking about a reliability team lead who's not expected to provide feedback or be active part of managing up, the way you describe it. But a true reliability manager is someone who perhaps is the team lead, but also manages up the way you describe it, where they're informing directors and everybody else what needs to happen or what could happen so that profitability increases or just essentially everyone wins in the organization.
And the customers, right? The people and the end users of the product actually get a product that's reliable to their expectations. Now, I would say it doesn't have to be a team lead or a designated manager. And I think that the concept of managing up to a large degree is being a reliability leader. And you can be just a simple engineer, like the only person that has a reliability moniker in your organization, or not even called a reliability anything. You could be a mechanical engineer, firmware engineer. But it's asking the right questions. What is it we're trying to achieve? What's the objective? How do we articulate that? What's our goal? And how are we going to measure? How are we going to get feedback? And then that's also things like, well, what don't we know? What are the things that are risks, that are uncertainties, and how are we going to understand those? How are we going to put those together? So part of it is that managing up, a lot of times, is just presenting, these are at risk. These are uncertainties. If I do this test, what am I going to compare the results to, for example? What's the objective here? Sometimes it's embarrassing questions, but it's part of the process.
Yeah, well, and managing up starts with communicating up. So I know you've seen plenty of reliability engineers and engineering presentations, which are just this mishmash of Excel spreadsheets and charts that only a small subset of humanity can possibly decode.
Well, you've been to some RAMS presentations then, haven't you? They get they're cleaned up and they're short.
Oh, man. I mean, as an aside, how many RAMS presentations or conference presentations have you been to where, in a vain attempt to try and simplify the message, you have slide limits and things like that, and all of a sudden all that does is decrease the font size because it's more important to the author or the presenter for them to feel heard versus for the audience to hear what they need to hear. And that's a huge problem, I'd argue, in this space. Just, you can't manage up if you can't communicate up and just focus on the key message, what it means, what you need to do, why this is valuable, now, and so on.
Tell me or at least I hope that still in this tutorial are this concept, and Carl are very articulate about making it clear, is that you got to understand what you're trying to achieve as an organization. Is it profitability? Is time to market? What are the details of that? But in a bigger picture, are we trying to be the Mercedes? Well, I shouldn't use Mercedes. Are we trying to be the Toyota luxury brand that's ultra reliable, or are we trying to be an affordable, dependable, but not superior reliability, right? But then budget for it and deal with it, make it easy to repair or diagnose and things like that. Or are we making a race car where it just has to last the duration of the race, right? What are we trying to achieve here? What's the overall objective for our mix of products or this particular product line in general? And then break that down to, what are we measuring? What do we know and don't know? What are the gaps? What do we need to do to improve the program, the overall infrastructure? And what do we need to do to bridge those gaps of providing feedback to the team? And then, but I remember that we talked a lot about, how do you pick the right tools, right? You don't always do the same things. I think we hammered that point over and over again. But it starts with understanding where you're trying to achieve, and then going through and understanding what those risks are. What we didn't spend a lot of time on was, here's all the ins and outs of every tool that's available. That's the whole conference, right? But it's, once you understand what an FMEA is, when and why would you use it? What's an accelerated test versus halt test, and when and why would you use those? And how do you justify those? What's the return on investment for doing those things? And that's where it circles back to the management part. And I'm sure you've had this, Chris, as you go to a director of engineering and say, hey, I need 6 people for a day to go study what could go wrong. And you're like, what? They need to be designing things that you go figure out why it's going to not go wrong. No, this is an FMEA. This is what its purpose is. But what's the return? What do I get for that effort? And so you got to be well-versed at articulating, this is why we do it. Here's what you're going to expect out of it. Here's why. This is the why and the expected return. And that's foreign to many reliability engineers, leaders, and managers.
Absolutely. It's and it requires brain power. And that's the other thing. We all want to be efficient with our time, and call it laziness if you wanted. But it does take effort, and it does require you to be pushed at least a little bit out of your comfort zone in some cases to, as a manager, to think about reliability, which means that reliability manager needs to be more, really, really good at selling the message or communicating or managing up. Because if they don't, then someone who's already inclined to ignore reliability is just going to have that internal decision reinforced if they get that horrific presentation. But you talked about RAMS itself and what RAMS and other symposiums and conferences do, or symposia, more correctly.
Your English teacher. And
it's Latin English. But yeah, I would suggest that today we see this growing divergence between the practical application of tools and what we hear about in these symposia, mainly because there is an ongoing academic requirement for anything to be published or anything to be taught to be somehow contributing something new.
That pushes and these folks all to the edges then.
That's the issue. I mean, it's always good to try and learn new stuff and try and find infinitesimally small incremental improvements on a statistical approach, so on and so forth. But at the end of the day, I would suggest that in the actual papers and journals in particular, you're seeing these more and more sophisticated and analytical approaches which have decreasing application to real-world problems. So just that, and that's one of the issues I think that that we are facing in this field is that there used to be. You imagine the time when familiars themselves were brand new, and then and when laptop computers were starting to come out. So instead of just having to assume constant hazard rates, we could actually do something more sophisticated. That's when some of these conferences became really, really interesting. But you know, I'd suggest that the manager needs to be aware of this and needs to be aware of, you know, just to understand that some of the most seemingly archaic but well drilled or well understood approaches to reliability are the very first things you need to do. And you only do the really fancy stuff if and when you get to such a strategically optimized level that you know everything so, so well. And you might not even need to get that space, depending on what your company vision is.
I can't speak for all conferences. I was on the committee for RAMS for, I don't know, 15 years almost, and going through thousands and thousands of proposals and papers and so on. And there's a big driving force from academia to get papers there and get their PhD students, get their research presented and published and so on. So there was a push from the academic world to get into RAMS and get published because it was a convenient way for them to get down into a journal, into a document and show they're published. And I think they get credit or points or something like that for it, whatever it is. But it's... And that's all well and good.
Yep.
RAMS used to be, 30 years ago, it was almost all military-type stuff. It was Air Force and Army development teams and labs, and it was more than half the attendance was military folks. That's less than 10% now, the military. Academic papers and so on, the committees that I was part of, and from my experience in the last 20 years, is that there's a recognition that if we did nothing but academic papers, we wouldn't be serving the public here. It's not the only use of that space or that time, and that's not why people are coming. They found that the case studies, the practical stories, the how to implement this, or the and then they started a tutorial program years and years ago, and those go into great detail. Here's how you do WIBO analysis. Here's the basics of fault tree analysis. Here's advanced reliability growth modeling by, you know, Larry, I'm drawing a complete blank on his last name. Larry Crow. Yeah. I mean, he's Larry basically Crow. Invented it. He's even got a reliability growth model named after him. And he's teaching the tutorial on how to do it. You got him right there in the flesh. There's nowhere else you can get this, right? All in one place. So the mix of tutorials tend to be very practical. There's a few of them that are out there a little bit. I've run into a few of those. But the papers tend to be about half and half, practical case studies. Here's what we did. Here's the problems we ran into. I find those really useful. The academic ones, if I need to brain twister, I go, that's just me. And the rooms are full. People go to them and attend, and I'm sure people are taking stuff away from it. There's a lot there at the conference.
I would maybe raise a maybe potentially controversial counterpoint to that. And I was there last year when I was told in non-certain terms, or we were told in non-certain terms by a representative of the committee that the primary reason RAMS exists is to allow PhD students to publish the way you spoke about. But
I think I know who that was.
But having the rooms packed, I agree. In some cases, you do have those rooms packed. But the question I'd ask you, Fred, is: are they themselves other PhD students or academics representing universities versus the people who are actually building and maintaining these things over the years?
It's a mix. One of the things that's refreshing is, or maybe not refreshing, is like a third of the attendants each year are first-time attendees. So the stickiness of people staying and coming back and learning over and over again has lots and lots of reasons. That is budgeting, and it's, you know, this was a training adventure for them. It was they moved out of reliability work. There's all kinds of reasons people wouldn't come back to a particular conference. But it also is two-thirds of the people have had one or more or two or more conferences, and about a third are regulars. So there's a cadre of folks that are continuing the discussion. Mm-hmm. And it's the fun part for me is when you finish the tutorial, be prepared for the onslaught. There's two types of people that come up. One want their certificate paperwork stamped, right? Which they're in there, they're prisoners. This is their core course. They have to take it. And there's a bunch of them. But then it's all the people that come up and go, and they'll wait. Carl and I were there once for an hour with people mm-hmm. lined up wanting to chat and ask questions and talk and just make it work. And that is so much fun. That's the part I'm going to miss.
Yeah, yeah.
I hope you enjoy it.
Well, that you asked a question, which I don't think I've answered in this little conversation about what it is that the tutorial is going to be about or what's changed. And I think in a roundabout way we've got there. There's some things, some principles, some tenets of reliability management which just don't change. In fact, I'd argue there's a lot of consistent principles, that engineering principles that come to play when you're mm-hmm. designing anything. It comes back to what does the customer want, what do they value, how does it influence our ability to do whatever it is we need to do, which is profitability or capability. Some very basic questions that the companies who are really, really good at this know, everyone in their organization knows what the answer to those fundamental existential questions are. And then once you've agreed on what the vision is, what you're trying to do, is it a Ferrari? Is it a Fiat? What are we trying? Are we trying to design that race car which lasts just the race, or are we trying to design a lunar buggy which is going to never just be indestructible? Mm-hmm. Once you've got that vision established, I'm sure you agree, it's almost trivially easy to go, what is for reliability, what the so what is for mass, what the so what is for material selection.
Yep.
It becomes so much simpler once you've got that established, and then reliability management almost gets subsumed as part of a larger, mature approach to managing the design process.
Yep. Excellent. So do you know when you're presenting? Do you happen to recall that? Or I know they send it out and then they change it, so it's not worth paying attention to until you get there.
Yeah, I believe I have been told, and I'm just flicking through my notes right now, but I believe it is in January. So I know
that's good.
That. But where are we?
Are you like Monday afternoon or Tuesday afternoon?
Yeah, so I believe it's Monday at 10:15 a.m. on January 27th. So 10:15 a.m. to 12:15 p.m. just before lunch.
Oh, and that's perfect because it's right after the big keynote opening, all the other good stuff. You guys are prime spot.
Actually, that's not true. That's one of my sorry, I might have told you the incorrect details, but I'll be lying if I said what I know what it is. That's what I'm doing one of my papers. So I need to retract that scurrilous information.
You're in a great spot for that. So, Yeah, no, that's fine. Usually for the last four or five years is they had a slotted Monday afternoon, like the 3:30, 3:15 slot. Now the tracking and the timing, and that is always subject to change. So don't take my word for it, but look for mm-hmm. reliability engineering management. If they got their program correct, they'll have both your names on it. I don't think they ever did. I think maybe one year they did. Got both Carl and my name on it. Quirk of the system they're using. How dare we do a tutorial with two people? But usually they gave us a great big room because it's a great topic and lots of people are interested. Arrive early so you can get a good seat. All that good stuff. If you go to Rams for no other reason, go see Chris and Carl's show. Their presentation.
That's the show.
It should be very, very fun and entertaining. And I'm glad you've taken it on, Chris, because you're going to bring in a different set of experiences and backgrounds than what Carl and I have enjoyed in our careers. So it's going to add some flavor to it. It's going to add some nice experience to it. And I think you're going to really excel at it and have a great time. So that should be fun.
Thanks, Fred. And it was an honor for you guys, for you to think of me too, when we were talking about what the next step of this course is going to be. And you and Carl have certainly influenced a good number of reliability engineers over the years, myself included. So again, the key message is simple. People have made reliable products in the past, but we just need, the only thing we need to adapt is how it applies to new technologies, but the mindset stays the same. So hopefully people who have been to this tutorial in the past will recognize a lot of what you in particular have brought to the table over the years as well.
All right, great. Make sure you bash MTBF a little bit for me. So that'll be good.
Way ahead of you, Fred. just for listeners, that was Fred asked me a couple of questions before he allowed me to step into this space.
I did not ask you that. I expected it. That was so let's wrap it up. So if you are heading to RAMS, this podcast should come out about a week just before that. So you should probably already know and have your tickets and stuff to Palm Springs, I believe it's in this year. Enjoy, attend this deal. And we look forward to hearing back from you with your review. What do you think? And what questions do you have? If you couldn't get them answered during the session, ask us here. Head over to ascendoreliability.com/go/SOR. And let us know. You can also find Chris and I on LinkedIn or through our About pages. And we certainly enjoy hearing from you. So with that, Chris, safe travels and enjoy the conference. Sounds like you got a paper and a tutorial, and I'm sure there's plenty of other things on your schedule as always, but it should be an enjoyable time.
Absolutely, Fred. And sad that you're not going to be turning up to the first RAMS conference for about 1,300 years. And,
that's only in MTBF hours. On average, it's only been 20.
Right. Okay. Yeah, fair enough.
Don't make me that old. All right. Thanks, Chris. We'll talk to you later.
Thanks, Ray.
Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation. If you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show, please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.